you thought you'd tune in tonight and have something light and sweet and enjoyable? Oh, no, my friends. I'm on a roll. I'm on a huge roll. I don't get no butter or jelly with it or anything else. Good evening. Welcome to another special edition of Perspectives on America. We're going to be dealing with a very unusual program tonight. It's not an extension of what we did last night. In some respects, there are some references, but it's not because of that. It's something real. It's the basis of a speech that was given in this country in 1967. I'll tell you later who the speaker was. But he made one interesting statement, and I challenge each and every one of you with this, because it's up to you, and you, and you, all of the American people, to force Congress, our so-called elected servants, to haul in American traitors for impeachments, and that when proven guilty, they all be given the punishment prescribed for traitors who aid and abet our enemies. They all live among us. The question is, how and why the United Nations is the crux of the great conspiracy to destroy the sovereignty of the United States and the enslavement of the American people within a UN one world dictatorship is a complete and unknown mystery to the vast majority of the American people. And the reason for this unawareness of the frightening danger to our country and to the entire free world is quite simple, my friends. The masterminds behind this great conspiracy have absolute control of all our mass communications media, especially television, the radio, the press, Hollywood. We all know that our State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House have brazenly proclaimed that they have the right and the power to manage the news, to tell us not the truth, but what they want us to believe. They have seized that power on orders from their masters of the great conspiracy, and the objective is to brainwash the people, you and I, into accepting the phony peace bait to transform the United States into an enslaved unit of the United Nations one world government. First of all, one must bear in mind that the so-called UN police action in Korea, fought by the United States back in the 50s, in which 150,000 of our sons were murdered and maimed, was part of the plot. Just as the undeclared by Congress war in Vietnam, in which our sons were dying, as part of the plot. Just as the plot against Rhodesia in South Africa, in which our sons died, was all part of the UN plot. And it goes on and on and on. And yet the vitally important thing for all Americans, all you mothers of the boys who died in these countries, to know is that our so-called leaders in Washington, who we elected to safeguard our nation and our Constitution, they are the betrayers, and that behind them are a comparatively small group of men whose sole objective is to enslave the whole world of humanity in their satanic plot of one world government. Now, in order to give you a very clear picture of this satanic plot, let's go back to its beginning. Clear back in the middle of the 18th century, we'll name the men who put that plot into action and then bring you down to the present, today's status of that plot. And as a matter of further intelligence, a term used by the FBI, let me clarify the meaning of the expression, he is a liberal. The enemy, meaning the one-world conspirators, have seized upon that word liberal as a cover-up for their activities. Oh, my friends, it sounds so innocent, so humanitarian to be liberal. Well, make sure that the person who calls himself a liberal or is described as a liberal is not, in truth, a red. Now, we've done a lot of historical stuff yesterday and today. So let's go back and take a look at this satanic plot, which was launched back in the 1760s when it first came into existence under the name Illuminati. The Illuminati was organized by one Adam Weishaupt, a man who was born a Jew, who was converted to Catholicism and became a Catholic priest. And then, at the behest of the then newly organized House of Rothschild, defected and organized the Illuminati. Well, naturally, the Rothschilds financed that operation in every war since then, beginning with the French Revolution, and has been promoted by the Illuminati, operating under various names and guises. Now, I say under various names and guises because after the Illuminati was exposed and became notorious, Weishaupt and his co-conspirators began to operate under various other names. In the United States, immediately after World War I, they set up what they called the Council on Foreign Relations, commonly referred to as the CFR. Oh, you didn't know the Council on Foreign Relations went back that many years, did you? Well, this CFR is actually the Illuminati in the United States and its hierarchy. Now, the masterminds in control of the original Illuminati conspirators, but to conceal that fact, most of them changed their original family names to American-sounding names. For example, the true name of the Dillons, Clarence and Douglas Dillon, who was once the Secretary of the U.S. Treasury Department, was Leposky. But we'll get back to that later. Now, there's a similar establishment of the Illuminati in England operating out of the name of the British Institute of International Affairs. There are similar secret Illuminati organizations in France and Germany and other nations operating under different names. And all of these organizations, including the CFR, continuously set up numerous subsidiary or front organizations that are infiltrated into every phase of the various nations' affairs. Every phase. But at all times, the operations of these organizations were and are masterminded and controlled by the internationalist bankers, who in turn were and are controlled by the Rothschilds. Now, one branch of the Rothschild family had financed Napoleon. Another branch of the Rothschilds financed Britain, Germany, and the other nations during the same Napoleonic Wars. So, immediately after the Napoleonic Wars, the Illuminati assumed that all the nations were so destitute and so weary of wars that they'd be glad for any solution. So, the Rothschild stooges set up what they called Congress in Vienna. And at that meeting, they tried to create the first League of Nations, their first attempted one-world government, on the theory that all the crowned heads of European governments were so deeply in debt to them that they would willingly or unwillingly serve as their stooges. And I don't mean Mo, Larry, and Curly. But then you see the Tsar of Russia caught the stench of the plot and completely torpedoed it. The enraged Nathan Rothschild, then the head of the dynasty, vowed that someday he or his descendants would destroy the Tsar and his entire family, and his descendants did accomplish that very threat in 1917. They were all murdered. Now, at this point, bear in mind that the Illuminati was not set up to operate on a short-range basis. Normally, a conspirator of any type enters into a conspiracy with the expectation of achieving his objective during his own lifetime. But that was not the case with the Illuminati. No, they hoped to accomplish their objective during their lifetime, but paraphrasing, the show must go on, the Illuminati operates on a very long-range basis. Whether it'll take scores of years or even centuries, they have dedicated their descendants to keep the pot boiling until they hope the conspiracy is achieved. Now, let's go back to the birth of the Illuminati. Adam Weishaupt, Jesuit-trained professor of canon law, teaching in Ingolstadt University when he defected from Christianity to embrace the Luciferian conspiracy. It was in the year 1770 that the professional moneylenders, the then recently organized House of Rothschild, retained him to revise and modernize the age-old protocols of Zionism, which from the outset was designed to give the synagogue of Satan, so named by Jesus Christ, ultimate world domination so they could impose the Luciferian ideology upon what would remain of the human race after the final social cataclysm by use of satanic despotism. Weishaupt completed his task on May the 1st, 1776. Oh, maybe now you know why May 1 is the great day with all communist nations to this very day. Oh, and May 1 is also Law Day, as declared by the American Bar Association. Well, that was the day, May 1, 1776, that Weishaupt completed his plan and officially organized the Illuminati to put the plan into execution. And that plan required the destruction of all existing governments and religions. And that objective was to be reached by dividing the masses of people whom Weishaupt termed as Goyism, or human cattle, into opposing camps in ever-increasing numbers on political, social, economic, and other issues. The very conditions that we have in this country today. You get it? Putting people into opposing camps in ever-increasing numbers on political, social, economic, and other issues. And the opposing sides were then to be armed and incidents provided, which would back then cause them to fight and weaken themselves and gradually destroy national governments and religious institutions. Again, I say, the very conditions we're living under in this country and in this world today. And at this point, let me stress a prime feature of the Illuminati plans. When, and if their blueprint for world control, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, is discovered and exposed, they would wipe all the Jews off the face of the earth in order to divert suspicions from themselves. Now, if you think that's far-fetched, bear in mind that they permitted Adolf Hitler, a liberal socialist himself, who was financed by corrupt Kennedy, the Warburgs, and the Rothschilds to incinerate 600,000 Jews. Now, just why did the conspirators choose the word Illuminati for their satanic organization? Weishaupt himself said the word is derived from Lucifer and means holder of the light. And using the lie that this his objective was to bring about a one-world government to enable those with mental ability to govern the world and prevent all wars in the future. In short, using the words peace on earth as his bait, exactly as that same bait as peace was used by the 1945 conspirators to work the United Nations on us, force the United Nations on us, financed by Weishaupt. Oh, I'm sorry, I mean by the Rothschilds, who then recruited some 2,000 paid followers. And they included the most intelligent men in the field of arts and letters, education, the sciences, finance, and industry. And he then established lodges of the Grand Orient, Masonic lodges, to be their secret headquarters. And I again repeat that in all of this, he was acting under orders from the House of Rothschild. And the main features of the Weishaupt plan of operation required his Illuminati to do the following things to help them accomplish their purpose. Use money and sex bribery to obtain control of men already in high places in the various levels of governments and other fields of endeavor. And once influential persons had fallen for the lies and deceits and temptations of the Illuminati, they were then to be held in bondage by application of political and other forms of blackmail. Threats of financial ruin, public exposure, fiscal harm, even death to themselves and loved members of their families. Do you realize how many present top officials in our present government in Washington are controlled in just that same way by the CFR? Do you realize how many homosexuals in our state government and the Pentagon and all federal agencies, even in the White House, are controlled that way? Illuminati and the faculties of colleges and universities were to cultivate students possessing exceptional mental ability, belonging to well-bred families with international leanings, and recommend them for special training in internationalism. Such training was to be provided by granting scholarships to those selected by the Illuminatists. All this kind of gives you an idea what a Rhodes Scholarship truly means. It means indoctrination into accepting the idea that only a one-world government can put an end to recurring wars and strife. I mean, that's how the United Nations was sold to we, the American people. One of the most notable Rhodes Scholars we had in this country during our lifetime was Senator William J. Fulbright, sometimes referred to as Halfbright, but his entire voting record spells Illuminati. All such scholars were to be first persuaded, then convinced that men of special talent and brains had the right to rule those less gifted on the ground the masses don't know what is best for them fiscally, mentally, spiritually. In addition, the Rhodes and similar scholarships today are three special Illuminati schools located in Gordonstown in Scotland, Salem in Germany, and Anavrita in Greece. Those three known ones. But there are others that are kept undercover. Prince Philip, the husband of Britain's late Queen Elizabeth, was educated at Gordonstown at the instigation of Lord Lewis Mountbatten, Prince Philip's uncle, a Rothschild relative who became Britain's Admiral of the Fleet after World War II ended. All influential people trapped into coming under the control of the Illuminati, plus the students who had been specially educated and trained. They were to be used as agents and placed behind the scenes of all governments as experts and specialists so that they could advise the top executives to adopt policies which would, in the long run, serve the secret plans of the Illuminati One World Conspiracy and bring about the destruction of the governments and religions they were elected or appointed to serve. Do you know how many such men operate in our government back in the 1960s? Names like Rusk, McNamara, Hubert Humphrey, Fulbright, Kuchel, and the list goes on and on and on. And maybe perhaps the most vital directive in Weishaupt's plan was to obtain absolute control of the press. At that time, the only mass communications media to distribute information to the public, so that all news and information could be slanted, so that the masses could be convinced that a one-world government was the only solution to our many and varied problems. You know who owns and controls our mass communications media? All the movie lots in Hollywood are owned by the Lehmans, Kuhn, Loeb & Company, Goldman Sachs, other internationalist bankers. Oh, a lot of that's changed, but maybe only the names. All the national radio and television channels in the nation are owned and controlled by those same internationalist bankers. And the same is true of every chain of metropolitan newspapers and magazines, and the press and wire services, Associated Press, United Press, International, etc., etc. And what about, what's his name? I'm going to blank, I can't think of his name right now, who's gone out and bought massive, large numbers of radio networks and stations in this country. But what about the supposed heads of all those media? They're nothing but merely the fronts of the internationalist bankers, who in turn compose the hierarchy of the CFR, today's Illuminati in America. And now do you begin to understand why Pentagon press agents so brazenly proclaims that the government has the right to lie to the people? The man who said that, his name was Sylvester. And what he really meant was that our CFR-controlled government had the power to lie and be believed by the brainwashed American people. Now let's go back a little bit. Let's go back again to the first days of the Illuminati. Well, because Britain and France were the two greatest world powers in the late years of the 18th century, Weishaupt ordered the Illuminati to foment the colonial wars, including our Revolutionary War, to weaken the British Empire and organize the French Revolution to begin in 1789. And yet, in 1784, a true act of God placed the Bavarian government in possession of evidence which proved the existence of the Illuminati. And that evidence could have saved France if they, the French government, had not refused to believe it. But here's how that act of God happened. 1784, when Weishaupt issued his orders for the French Revolution. Now, a German writer named Zweig put it into book form. It contained the entire Illuminati story and Weishaupt's plans. And a copy of that book was sent to the Illuminists in France, headed by Robespierre, whom Weishaupt had delegated to foment the French Revolution. So the courier was struck and killed by lightning as he rode through Rolleston on his way from Frankfurt to Paris. The police found the subversive documents on his body, turned them over to the proper authorities. And after a careful study of the plot, the Bavarian government ordered the police to raid Weishaupt's newly organized lodges of the Grand Orient and the homes of his most influential associates. All additional evidence thus discovered convinced the authorities that the documents were genuine copies of the conspiracy by which the Illuminati planned to use wars and revolutions to bring about the establishment of a one-world government. This is back in the 1700s. And the powers of which they, headed by the Rothschilds, intended to usurp as soon as it was established is exactly in line with the United Nations plot of these days. So by 1785, the Bavarian government outlawed the Illuminati, closed the lodges of the Grand Orient. 1786, they published all the details of the conspiracy. Now, the English title of that publication was The Original Writings of the Order and the Sect of the Illuminati. Copies of the entire conspiracy were sent to all heads of church and state in Europe. But the power of the Illuminati, which was actually the power of the Rothschilds, was so great that that warning was ignored. And yet, nevertheless, the Illuminati became a dirty word that went underground. Now, at the same time, Weishaupt ordered Illuminists to infiltrate into the lodges of Blue Masonry. They formed their own secret societies within all secret societies. Only Masons who proved themselves internationalists and those who proved that they had defected from God were initiated into the Illuminati. Thenceforth, the conspirators donned the cloak of philanthropy, humanitarianism, to conceal their revolutionary and subversive activities. But in order to infiltrate into Masonic lodges in Britain, Weishaupt invited one John Robison over to Europe. Now, Robison was a high-degree Mason in the Scottish Rite, was a professor of natural philosophy at Edinburgh University, secretary of the Royal Society of Edinburgh. Robison did not fall for the lie that the objective of the Illuminati was to create a benevolent dictatorship, but he kept his reactions to himself so well that he was entrusted with a copy of Weishaupt's revised conspiracy for study and safekeeping. But anyway, because the heads of the state and church in France were deluded into ignoring the warnings given them, the revolution broke out in 1789 as scheduled by Weishaupt. And in order to alert other governments to their danger in 1798, Robison published a book entitled Proof of a Conspiracy to Destroy All Governments and Religions. But his warnings were ignored, exactly as our American people have been ignoring all warnings about the United Nations and the Council on Foreign Relations for how many decades now? But now here's a little something that might stun and very likely outrage many of us. But there is documentary proof that our own Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton became students of Weishaupt. Jefferson was one of Weishaupt's strongest defenders when he was outlawed by his government, and it was Jefferson who infiltrated the Illuminati into the then newly organized lodges of the Scottish Rite in New England. Now here's some of the proof. 1789, Robeson warned all Masonic leaders in America that the Illuminati had infiltrated into their lodges, and on July 19, 1789, David Papin, president of Harvard University, issued the same warning to the graduating class and lectured them on how the influence of Illuminism was acquitting on American politics and religion. And to top it off, John Quincy Adams, who had organized the New England Masonic Lodges, issued his warnings. And he wrote three letters to Colonel William L. Stone, a top Mason, in which he exposed how Jefferson was using Masonic Lodges for subversive, illuministic purposes. And those three letters, back in the late 1960s, were still sitting in the Wittenberg Square Library in Philadelphia. In short, according to our author, and believe me, I will tell you later who the author is, Jefferson, the founder of the Democratic Party, and he was a member of the Illuminati, which at least partly accounts for the condition of the party at this time. And through infiltration of the Republican Party, we have exactly nothing of loyal Americanism today. And that disastrous rebuff at the Congress of Vienna, created by the Tsar of Russia, did not by any means destroy the Illuminati conspiracy. It merely forced them to adopt a new strategy, realizing that the one world idea was, for the moment, at that time, killed. But the Rothschilds decided that to keep the plot alive, they would have to do it by heightening their control of the money system of the European nations. Well, so a little bit earlier, by a ruse, the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo had been falsified. Rothschild had spread a story that Napoleon had won bad battle, which precipitated a terrific panic on the stock market in England. All stocks plummeted down to practically zero. Nathan Rothschild bought all the stocks for virtually a penny on its dollar values, which gave him complete control of the economy of Britain and virtually of all Europe. And so immediately after that, Congress in Vienna had boomeranged. Rothschild had forced Britain to set up a new Bank of England, which he had absolute control exactly, as later through Jacob Schiff, he engineered our own Federal Reserve Act, which gave the House of Rothschild a secret control of the economy in the United States. But now, for just a short moment, we're going to dwell on the activities of the Illuminati in the United States. Here was 1826. One Captain William Morgan decided it was his duty to inform all Masons and the general public what the full proof was regarding the Illuminati, their secret plans, intended objectives, and to reveal the identities of the masterminds of the conspiracy. And the Illuminati promptly tried Morgan in absentia and convicted him of treason. And they then ordered one Richard Howard, an English Illuminist, to carry out their sentence of execution as a traitor. Morgan was warned. He tried to escape to Canada, but Howard caught up with him near the border, near the Niagara Gorge, to be exact, where he murdered him. Now, that was verified in a sworn statement made in New York by one Avery Allen, to the effect that he heard Howard render his report of the execution to a meeting of Knights Templars in St. John's Hall in New York. And he also told how arrangements had been made to ship Howard back to England, and that Allen's affidavit is on record in New York City archives. Very few Masons and very few of the general public know that general disapproval over that incident of murder caused approximately half of all the Masons in the northern jurisdiction of the U.S. to secede. Copies of the minutes of the meeting held to discuss the matter are still in existence in safe hands. And that all that secrecy emphasizes the power of the masterminds of the Illuminati to prevent such terrible events of history from being taught in our schools. But then, let's face it, what the hell is being taught in our schools anymore? Well, let's change calendars. Let's go to the 1850s. The Illuminati held a secret meeting in New York, which was addressed by a British Illuminist named Wright. And those in attendance were told that the Illuminati was organizing to unite the nihilist and atheist groups with all other subversive groups into an international group to be known as communists. That's when the word communist first came into being, and it was intended to be the supreme weapon and scare word to terrify the whole world and drive the terrorist peoples into the Illuminati one world scheme. You see, this scheme, this communism, was to be used to enable the Illuminati to foment future wars and revolutions. Clinton Roosevelt, the direct ancestor of Franklin Roosevelt, Horace Greeley, Charles Dana, foremost newspaper publishers of that time, were appointed to head a committee to raise funds for the new venture. Of course, most of the funds were provided by the Rothschilds, and the fund was used to finance Karl Marx and Engels when they wrote Das Kapital and the Communist Manifesto in Soho, England. And all of this clearly reveals that communism is not a so-called ideology. It is, in fact, a secret weapon, a boogeyman word to serve the purpose of the Illuminati. But Weishaupt died in 1830. But prior to his death, he prepared a revised version of the age-old conspiracy. The Illuminati, which under various aliases was to organize, finance, direct, and control all international organizations and groups by working their agents into executive positions at the top. In the United States, we had people like Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Jack Kennedy, Johnson, Rusk, McNamara, Fulbright, George Bush, etc. All these prime examples. In addition, while Karl Marx was writing the Communist Manifesto under the director of one group of Illuminists, Professor Karl Ritter of Frankfurt University was writing the Antitheses under the direction of another group. How do we do all of this stuff? This is pure insanity. Pure insanity. The idea was that those who directed the overall conspiracy could use the differences in these two so-called ideologies to enable them to divide larger and larger members of the human race into opposing camps so that they could be armed and then brainwashed into fighting and destroying one another. Particularly to destroy all political and religious institutions. And hence the work Ritter began was continued after his death and completed by the German so-called philosopher Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, who found Nietzscheanism. And Nietzscheanism was later developed into fascism and then into Nazism and was used to foment World War I and II. 1834, the Italian revolutionary leader Giuseppe Mazzini, selected by the Illuminati to direct their revolutionary program throughout the world. He served in that capacity until he died in 1872. Some years before he died, Mazzini had enticed an American general named Albert Pike into the Illuminati. No, Pike was fascinated by the idea of a one-world government, and ultimately he became the head of this Luciferian conspiracy. Between 1859 and 1871, he, Pike, worked out a military blueprint for three world wars and various revolutions throughout the world, which he considered would forward the conspiracy to its final stage in the 20th century. Now, allow me to remind you that these conspirators were never concerned with immediate success. They also operated in a long-range view. Pike did most of his work in his home in Little Rock, Arkansas. But a few years later, when the Illuminati's lodges at the Grand Orient became suspect and repudiated because of Mazzini's revolutionary activities in Europe, Pike organized what he called the New and Reform Palladian Rite. He set up three supreme councils, one in Charleston, South Carolina, one in Rome, Italy, and the third in Berlin, Germany. He had Mazzini establish 23 subordinate councils in strategic locations around the world. And they've been the secret headquarters of the World Revolutionary Movement ever since. But long before Marconi invented the radio, scientists in the Illuminati had found the means for Pike and the heads of his councils to communicate secretly. It was the discovery of that secret that enabled intelligence officers to understand how apparently unrelated incidents, such as the assassination of an Austrian prince at Serbia, took place simultaneously throughout the world, which developed into a war or a revolution. Pike's plan was as simple as it has proved effective. It called for communism, Nazism, political Zionism, and other international movements to be organized and used to foment 3 global world wars and at least 2 major revolutions. First World War was to be fought so as to enable the Illuminati to destroy Tsarism in Russia, as vowed by Rothschild after the Tsar had torpedoed his scheme at the Congress in Vienna, and to transform Russia into a stronghold of atheistic communism. And the differences stirred up by agents of the Illuminati between the British and the German empires were to be used to foment this war. And after the war would be ended, the communism was to be built up and used to destroy other governments and weaken religions. Wow. And then at some point, this thing called World War II came along. Maybe when and if necessary, was to be fomented by using the controversies between fascists and political Zionists. And here let it be noted that Hitler was financed by Krupp, the Warburgs, and the Rothschilds, and other internationalist bankers, and that the slaughter of the supposed 600,000 Jews by Hitler didn't bother the Jewish internationalist bankers at all. That slaughter was necessary in order to create worldwide hatred of the German people and thus bring about war against them. In short, that Second World War was to be fought to destroy Nazism and increase the power of political Zionism so that the state of Israel could be established in Palestine. During this World War II, international communism was to be built up until it equaled in strength so that of the united Christendom. And when it reached that point, it was to be contained and kept in check until required for the final social cataclysm. As we all know now, Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin, they put that exact policy into effect. Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy, and Johnson, and Bush continued that same exact policy. World War III is to be fomented by you. Now, this is what you've got to listen to. This becomes important. We've been through World War I. We've been through World War II. Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, so much crap. But nothing's been officially called World War III yet. But it's to be fomented by using the so-called controversies. Agents of the Illuminati operating under whatever new name as are now being stored up between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Muslim world. The war is to be directed in such a manner that all of Islam and political Zionism, or Israel, would destroy each other while at the same time the remaining nations, once more divided on this issue, would be forced to fight themselves into a state of complete exhaustion, physically, mentally, spiritually, and economically. My friends, can any thinking person doubt that the intrigue now going on in the Middle East and the Far East is designed to accomplish a satanic objective? Pike himself foretold all of this in a statement he made to Mazzini on August the 15th of 1871, when he stated that after World War III is ended, those who will aspire to undisputed world domination will provoke the greatest social cataclysm the world has ever known. Quoting his own words, taken from the letter he wrote to Mazzini, which later is now cataloged in the British Museum in London, he said, "We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a great social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to all nations the effect of absolute atheism, the origins of savagery, and of most bloody turmoil. And then everywhere the people will be forced to defend themselves against the world minority of the world revolutionaries and will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitudes disillusioned with Christianity, whose spirits will be, from that moment, without direction and leadership, and they'll be anxious for an ideal, but without knowledge where to send its adoration. They will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out into public view. A manifestation which will result from a general reactionary movement which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. When Mazzini died in 1872, Pike made another revolutionary leader named Adrian Lemmy his successor. Lemmy, in turn, was succeeded by Lenin and Trotsky, then by Stalin. And the revolutionary activities of all those men were financed by the British, the French, the German, and the American international bankers, all of whom were dominated by the House of Rothschild. I mean, we're supposed to believe that the international bankers of today, like the money changers of Christ's day, are the only tools or agents of the great conspiracy? But actually, they're the masterminds behind all the mass communications media, leading us into believing that communism is a movement of the so-called workers. The actual fact is that both British and American intelligence officers had authentic documentary evidence that international liberals, operating through their international banking houses, particularly the House of Rothschild, had financed both sides of every war and revolution since 1776. My friends, those who today comprise the conspiracy, the CFR in the U.S., or direct our governments, whom they hold in usury through such methods as the Federal Reserve System in America to fight wars, or as it was in Vietnam, created by the United Nations, so as to further Pike's Illuminati plans to bring the world to that stage of the conspiracy where atheistic communism and the whole of Christianity could be forced into an all-out Third World War within each remaining nation, as well as on an international basic scale. But the headquarters of the great conspiracy in the late 1700s was in Frankfurt, Germany, where the House of Rothschild had been established by Mayor Amschel, who adapted the Rothschild name and linked together other international financiers who had literally sold their souls to the devil. And after the Bavarian government's exposure in 1786, the conspirators moved their headquarters to Switzerland and sent to London. And since World War II, after Jacob Schiff and the Rothschilds' boy in America died, the headquarters of the American branch had been in the Harold Pratt Building in New York City. And the Rockefellers, original proteges of Schiff, had taken over the manipulation of finances in America for the Illuminati. And so in the final phases of the conspiracy, the one world government will consist of the king dictator, the head of the United Nations, the CFR, and yeah, a few billionaires, economists, and scientists who have proved their devotion to this great conspiracy. All others would be integrated into a vast conglomeration of mongrelized humanity, actual slaves. Now let me show you how our federal government and the American people have been sucked into the one world government takeover plot of the Illuminati's great conspiracy. And always bear in mind that the United Nations was created to become the housing for that one world, so-called liberal conspiracy. The real foundations of the plot of the takeover of the United States were laid during the period of our Civil War. Not that Weishaupt and the earlier masterminds had ever overlooked the New World, as we have previously indicated. But Weishaupt had his agents planted over here as far back as the Revolutionary War. But George Washington was more than a match for them. It was during the Civil War that the conspirators launched their first concrete efforts. We know that Judah Benjamin, chief advisor of Jefferson Davis, was the Rothschild agent. We also know that there were Rothschild agents planted in Abraham Lincoln's cabinet who tried to sell him into a financial dealing with the House of Rothschild. Strangely enough, old Abe happened to see through that scheme and bluntly rejected it, thereby incurring the undying enmity of the Rothschilds, exactly as the Russian Tsar had done when he torpedoed their first League of Nations at the Congress in Vienna. So investigation of the assassination of Lincoln revealed that the assassin Booth was a member of a secret conspiratorial group. And because there was a number of highly important government officials involved, the name of the group was never released, and it became a mystery, exactly as the assassination of Jack Kennedy has remained a mystery all these years. But I'm sure it'll not remain a mystery for long. Anyway, the ending of the Civil War destroyed temporarily all chances of the House of Rothschild to get a clutch on our money system, such as they had acquired in Britain and other nations in Europe. Oh, I say temporarily because the Rothschilds and the masterminds of the conspiracy, they never quit. So they had to start from scratch. But they lost no time in getting started, Jack. Surely, after the Civil War, a young immigrant who called himself Jacob H. Schiff arrived in New York. The young man with a mission for the House of Rothschild. He was a son of a rabbi who was born in one of the Rothschilds' houses in Frankfurt, Germany. Now, we can go deeply into his background. We'll share a little bit. The important point was that Rothschild recognized in him not only a potential money wizard, but more important, he also saw the latent Machiavellian qualities in Jacob that could, as it did, make him an invaluable functionary in the great one-world conspiracy. And after a comparatively brief training period in the Rothschild London Bank, Jacob left for America with instructions to buy into a banking house, which was to be the springboard to acquire control of the money system in this country. And actually, Jacob came here to carry out four specific assignments. And most important was to acquire control of America's monetary system. Find desirable men who, for a price, would be willing to serve as stooges for the great conspiracy and promote them in the high places in our federal government and our Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court and all federal agencies. Get them to create minority group strife throughout the nations, particularly between the whites and blacks. Create a movement to destroy religion in the United States, but Christianity to be the chief target. Now, moments ago, we stated that Schiff came to America with orders by Rothschild to carry out four specific directives. And the first and most important was to get control of the United States money system. So we begin to trace Schiff's steps to accomplish that directive. At a first step, he had to buy into a banking house, but it had to be the kind of house that he could absolutely control and mold for that primary objective of entrapping our U.S. monetary system. And after carefully scouting around, Jacob bought a partnership in a firm that called itself Kuhn Loeb. Well, like Schiff, Kuhn and Loeb were immigrants from German Jewish ghettos. They came to the U.S. in the mid-1840s. Both of them started their business careers as itinerant pack peddlers. In the early 1850s, they pooled their interests and set up a merchandise store in Lafayette, Indiana, under the name of Kuhn and Loeb, servicing the covered wagon settlers on their way west. And in the years that followed, they set up similar stores in Cincinnati and St. Louis and other places. And then they added pawnbroking into their merchandising pursuits. From that to money listing was a short and quick step, right? Because by the time Schiff arrived on the scene, Kuhn and Loeb was a well-known private banking firm, and this is the firm Jacob bought into. And shortly after he became a partner in Kuhn Loeb, Schiff married Loeb's daughter, Teresa. And then he bought out Kuhn's interest and moved the firm to New York, and Kuhn Loeb became Kuhn Loeb & Company. International bankers with Jacob Schiff, agent of the Rothschilds. ostensibly the sole owner. And yet throughout his career, this blend of Judas and Machiavelli, the first hierarch of the Illuminati's great conspiracy in America, poses a generous philanthropist and a man of great holiness, the cover-up policy set forth by the Illuminati. And so, as we have stated, the first great step of the conspiracy was to be the entrapment of our money system. And to achieve that objective, Schiff had to get full cooperation of the then big banker elements in America. And that was easier said than done. But even in those years, Wall Street was the heart of the American money mart, and J.P. Morgan was its dictator. And next in line were the Drexels and the Biddles of Philadelphia. All the other financiers, big and little, danced to the music of those three houses, but particularly to that of Morgan. And of those three were proud, haughty. All three of these were proud, haughty, and arrogant potentates. Now, for the first few years, they viewed the little bewhiskered men from the German ghettos with utter contempt. But Jacob knew how to overcome that. Threw a few Rothschild bones to them. Said bones being distribution in America of desirable European stock and bond issues. And then he discovered he still had more potent weapon in his hands than the following. It was, you see, in the decades following our Civil War that our industries began to burgeon. We had great railroads to build. The oil, mining, steel, textile industries were bursting out of their swaddling clothes. All of that called for vast financing. Much of that financing had to come from abroad, which meant that the House of Rothschild, and that was when Schiff came into his own. Oh, he played a very crafty game. He became the patron saint of John D. Rockefeller, Edward Harriman, and Andrew Carnegie. He financed the Standard Oil Company for Rocky, the railroad empire for Harriman, the steel empire for Carnegie. But instead of hogging all the other industries for Kuhn and Loeb Company, he opened the doors of the House of Rothschild to Morgan, Biddle, and Drexel. And in turn, Rothschild arranged the setting up of London, Paris, European, and other branches of those three, but always in partnerships with Rothschild subordinates. And Rothschild made it very clear to all those men that Schiff was to be the boss in New York. Thus, at the turn of the century, Schiff had a tight control of the entire banking fraternity on Wall Street, which by then, with Schiff's help, included Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, and other internationalist banks that were headed by men chosen by the Rothschilds. In short, that meant control of the nation's money powers, and he was then ready for the giant step, the entrapment of our national money system. Do it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back for the second hour. This is a very intense program tonight. And I'm going to tell you right now, we'll never get through it all. Stay with it. I'll share all I can, and I'll share with you where you'll be able to hear the rest of the story. Be back in a few minutes.
We live in a political world. Love don't have any place. We're living in times when men commit crimes and crime don't have a face. We live in a political world. Icicles hanging down. Wedding bells ringing, angels singing, clouds cover up the ground. We live in a political world. Wisdom is thrown into jail. It rots in a cell, misguided as hell. Leaving no one to pick up the trail. sure that it's real. We live in a political world. The cities of a lonesome fear. Little by little, you turn to the middle, but you're never sure why you're here. We live in a political world. Under the microscope, you can travel anywhere and hang yourself there. You always got more than enough rope. We live in a political world. Turning in a thrashing about. As soon as you awake, you're trained to take what looks like the easy way out.
Simple with Colorado Shilajit, fact bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Raja Yana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.